You're listening to the sermon podcast from St. Albans Episcopal Church in Waco, Texas. Find us online at stalbanswaco.org to learn more.
May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. You may be seated. Good morning. My name is Blair Lundborg, and I'm filling in today. Aaron is traveling, and Garrett was unable to be two places at one time, so here I am. I'm a retired Lutheran pastor. I normally sit here in the front row, which is really kind of a mean thing to do to preachers now that I'm standing here. I guess that's payback. I told people, come up front. Now I know why they don't, because anyway, I haven't done this for a while. So when Garrett asked if I would preach today, I thought, yeah, that'd be fun to get back in the pulpit again. I've been retired for just a little over 6 years now, and have only preached a couple of times since then. But I figured preaching is kind of like riding a bike, right? Once you've done it, you just hop right back on the bike and ride again. So I think preaching is kind of the same. I just climb back up here in the pulpit and preach again. And then I sat down to put together some thoughts for today, and I realized it wasn't quite that simple. You see, there's something about preaching week after week, as Aaron and Garrett do and I used to do, that kind of develops a rhythm, and it establishes a relationship between people and preacher. When Garrett preaches, I try to guess which movie or YouTube clip he's going to give us. When Aaron preaches, of course, I'm wondering what obscure musician or song. When I say obscure, I'm just guess not quite up on my pop culture. So I don't have that with the people of St. Albans. I'm just kind of a one-and-done preacher who's filling in just because St. Albans is so short-staffed. I'm kind of like that substitute teacher you had in middle school. Remember that? When I was in middle school, subs were notorious for pulling out a video to fill the hour. Now, by video, what I mean are those little reel-to-reel things that wound through this really noisy and hot machine. Video. Some of you know what that is. And when that video came out, the kids did one of two things. They laid their head and took a nap or shot spitballs at each other. I got to be honest with you, this old substitute teacher thought about just pulling out an old sermon and forcing you to sit through it. After all, I got 35 years of old sermons and quite a few on our text for this morning. But then I looked back on some of those old sermons and I thought to myself, if I tried to preach one of those oldies but goodies, I'm afraid that, well, you'd probably do what I did in middle school, either lay your head down, take a nap, or start shooting spitballs at each other. So I'm not going to give you an old recycled sermon from the 90s when I was in my prime. What you're getting today is some thoughts from just a nearly 70-year-old preacher who just needs a word of grace in a world that I think desperately needs a world of grace. So let's dig into our gospel text and see what kind of grace God has for us today. Got to give you a little warning, though. We got to be extra careful with today's text because it's one of those words from Jesus that can easily be turned into an impossible checklist of things to do if you want to be a good Christian. I think about a sermon Aaron preached just recently, in fact, about checklists of things that good Christians do in order to be real Christians. You remember that sermon? If you weren't here, you got to YouTube it. It's awesome. Just check off all those boxes and do good deeds, and you too can be a real Christian. The Sermon on the Mount, which is part of our text for today, is one of those texts that preachers often turn into checklists of impossible things to do. But if you do them, you too can become a real Christian. Sounds like this impossible thing to accomplish. Jesus talks about salt and light and good works and letting our light shine and fulfilling the law. It's all there. So let's take a look. Listen again. Jesus said, "You are the salt of the earth. But if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? It's no longer good for anything, but it is thrown out and trampled underfoot." Whoa, where's the grace in that, Jesus? I don't know about you, but so far I'm 0 for 1. But wait, there's more. Jesus says, "You are the light of the world. People do not light a lamp and put it under a bushel basket, but rather they put it on a lampstand and it gives light for the whole house." Oh man, strike two for me. Where's the grace? We read Jesus' words and we come to the conclusion that, okay, Jesus, I need to be saltier and shinier and more visible, more righteous, preferably by Tuesday. But here's the thing. Jesus doesn't begin this passage by saying, "Try harder." He doesn't say, "One day, if you really apply yourself, you'll become salt." He doesn't say, "With enough spiritual discipline, you too can qualify as light." No, he says, "You are. You are the light of the world. You are the salt of the earth." Not "you should be," not "you better be," but "you are." That's gospel grammar, folks. Indicative before imperative. Gift before task. Identity before activity. And that matters because checklists don't save us. Good deeds done don't transform us. Grace does and will. All right, let's break it down some more. First of all, what's the deal with salt? Well, in Jesus' day, salt was a very valuable commodity. It was used for preserving food, of course, for enhancing flavor, but sometimes even used as currency. Today, of course, salt has a more complicated reputation. Some of us have been told to avoid it. I'm one of those. I'm on a couple different blood pressure medications. I recently had my annual Medicare physical, and my doctor wasn't very happy with my blood pressure. And so he gave me the same pitch he gives me every year. He says, "Well, Blair, are you watching your salt?" And I said, "Well, doc, I really, really try," which isn't entirely truthful. So he switched up my medication and winked at me, and we'll probably have the same conversation again next year. But Jesus is not your typical cardiologist here. He's talking about the heart for sure, but the saltiness he wants is the spice of life. It is the zest that brings our faith alive. He's encouraging us to be faithfully salty. Jesus doesn't say you are the low sodium substitute of the earth. He says you are the salt of the earth, which makes a difference. Because your presence in this world matters. You make a difference just because of who you are and where you are. And it's not a flashy or splashy thing. That's not how salt works. Salt doesn't shout. Salt doesn't call attention to itself. Salt just does what salt does, and it does it quietly, faithfully, effectively. And then there's light. Light doesn't strain. Light doesn't panic about whether it's being bright enough. Light doesn't wake up in the morning wondering, "Am I shining correctly?" No, light just shines. Jesus says, "You are the light of the world." Not because you're impressive, not because you've mastered holiness, but because the light of the world, Jesus, has claimed you and now shines through you. That's important because many of us hear this passage and we immediately turn it inward and we ask, am I doing enough? Am I visible enough? Is my light bright enough? Am I faithful enough? But Jesus isn't handing out performance reviews here. He's telling the truth about who we already are, that you are salt, that you are light. So this sermon comes right after the Beatitudes. We heard that last week, the Beatitudes, and that's where Jesus said, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are the meek, the merciful, the peacemakers. So Jesus has just blessed people who really don't look like spiritual overachievers. You know what I mean? And then he says, those people, those ordinary, flawed, struggling disciples, they are the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Salt of the earth and light of the world, which suggests that shining doesn't require perfection and saltiness doesn't require purity. In fact, if perfection were required, the light would never come on. It just wouldn't. Jesus goes on, no one lights a lamp and puts it under a bushel basket, which is a huge relief, at least for me. It tells me that I'm not hiding my light on purpose. Sometimes we're just tired or we're just unsure or we're struggling. We have a period of doubt. Or convinced that what we have to offer isn't really all that impressive. But Jesus isn't worried about that. He knows even a small light changes a dark room. He knows that grace has a way of leaking out, and it doesn't take much of it to make a difference. And then comes the line that really makes us nervous. So for those of you who like checklists, now's the time to bring out your paper and your pen, and you can jot down a few notes here so you can check the box all the rest of the week. Have it done by Tuesday. Let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. Bingo, there it is. Good works. I knew Jesus would eventually give us a checklist. We just need to let our light shine brightly enough so people can see our good works. That's strike three for me, and I'm out. Or maybe not. Notice the direction of the spotlight. The good works don't point back to us. They point to God. If people walk around impressed with us, then maybe we've missed the point. But if they catch a glimpse, just even a taste of mercy or compassion or patience or forgiveness, if they see just a shiny glimmer of God when looking at us, then the light is doing what light does. Because this is not about earning God's approval. It is all about living from it. Big difference. Which brings us finally to the law. Jesus said, I've not come to abolish the law and the prophets, but to fulfill them. Big word there, fulfill. Not tighten, not weaponize, but fulfill. Jesus fulfills the law not by demanding more from us, but by himself demonstrating God's faithfulness for us. He fulfills the law by loving God completely and loving neighbor relentlessly on our behalf, in our place, so that eventually that light will shine through us. So when Jesus talks a little later on, when he does about exceeding the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, he's not setting an impossible bar so that we all fail miserably or spectacularly. He's not trying to trip us up or trap us. He is pointing to a righteousness that is received before it is practiced, a righteousness that comes as gift before it shows up as action. We don't shine in order to become the children of God. We shine because we already are. You are light. You are salt. Which means the pressure is off, folks. It really is. You don't have to manufacture holiness. You don't have to audition for God's approval. You don't have to sparkle on demand. You're salt, even on days when you feel bland. You are light, even on days when you feel dim. Because the light we carry is not self-generated. It is borrowed. It is shared. And even more than that, it is a gift. It is Christ's own life and light shining through us. And that's grace, pure and simple. So let your light shine, not as a checklist or a performance, not as a burden, but just as that quiet, confident trust that Christ is already at work in you and through you. And that, folks, is worth giving thanks to God. Amen.
Thanks for listening to the Sermon Podcast from St. Albans Episcopal Church in Waco, Texas. Find us online at stalbanswaco.org to learn more.